You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Hey teachers, it's Tim Topham here. Welcome back to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. This is episode 355, and we're continuing our theme of this month, which is all about teaching some of our first advanced students, or if you're already teaching advanced students, how to get even better at it. If you've ever wondered if you'd be capable of teaching advanced students, or perhaps felt a little bit lacking in confidence as your students have moved into late intermediate and then early advanced repertoire, then we've got your answers today. The sad thing, as I mentioned last week, if you listened to the episode then, is that many teachers work for years and years to build the skills of their best students, only to hand them over to another teacher when they hit this stage. And so not only do you lose that connection with the student and their family, you also lose the fruits of all your beginner and intermediate labor that you've put in, and precious income, of course. So do you really need to hand over students, or is there a potential for taking them on and continuing to work with them on their advanced repertoire? That's what we're talking about today. Last week, you heard from a teacher who did this for the first time, despite a lot of trepidation and imposter syndrome. Make sure you listen to episode 354 with Suzanne Andrews for the full story and to find out exactly what happened in the end for that one. Today, I am joined by the amazing Jana Williamson. She's a highly sought-after teacher of students of all levels with two decades of professional teaching experience. She maintains a home studio in West Chicago and taught at the Wheaton Yamaha School from 2001 to 2020. She has been an MTNA nationally certified teacher of music since 2004 and holds bachelor's and master's degrees in piano performance. Jana enjoys performing solo or collaboratively and can be heard throughout the Chicago area on a regular basis. Jana Williamson, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. You are, of course, one of our expert teachers here at Top Music and recording videos on a regular basis, helping teachers understand how to teach some of the most common historical repertoire. And you're also a teacher of advanced students. You're a performer. I mean, you're an all-around amazing teacher. This month, we're focusing on helping teachers who want to teach more advanced students and to try and give them more confidence and some skills and answer questions. But before that, I thought it's worth covering what music are we talking about when we're talking about advanced music?
Sure. Well, of course, everyone has their own definitions for these kinds of things. And, you know, anything I say, you could kind of wiggle around that. But generally, if you're thinking of advanced piano repertoire, you'd be thinking of things that a student would be studying in undergraduate level collegiate course. So something like Bach Preludes and Fugues, the standard sonatas by Beethoven, Haydn, and Mozart, larger romantic and 20th century works. And so so that would be what I would classify as, you know, standard advanced repertoire. And in this course that we're going to talk about, I've done a little bit on the early advanced side. I have touched on those things, but I've tried to kind of think of it as advancing students, those who are leaving the intermediate level and walking towards that standard advanced repertoire.
And so in Australia, we would call this, in the Australian Music Exam Boards, they have up to grade 8. So we're talking about past grade 8, really, I think. So their certificate of performance, they call it, and then on to diploma studies, the AMSA and LMSA, the Associate and Licentiate of Music. And the other exam boards have similar gradings. So what about some pieces like Debussy, let's talk Girl with the Flaxen Hair or Clair de Lune, for example. Would you be classing those pieces in this?
Girl with the Flaxen Hair is kind of right on the line for me. I actually have a video and piece by piece on that on the membership in our intermediate series. I would qualify that as upper intermediate. That's one of the easiest things he wrote because Debussy wrote hardly anything that's actually easy to play. And Clair de Lune, because it's part of the Sweetberg Mask, is I would qualify that as early advanced. And certainly if you were looking at that entire suite, you'd be looking at an advanced work. And I've heard graduate students play that entire suite on a graduate recital. So, you know, excerpting just that movement, early advanced in my mind.
And I would say something like Chopin's Fantasy Impromptu would be the same, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Yes.
So we're talking
the first ballade, that, you know, yeah, the ballade in G minor, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So all longer works, complex rhythms, octaves. I mean, we're really pushing the boundaries of what students would have learnt in their intermediate years. So the big question here is, we hear lots of teachers, and I've done this myself earlier on in my career, who hand over their students when they get to a certain level. It's like we all freak out and go, I can't possibly do this anymore. Who can I get to help? Why do you think teachers do this?
Well, I actually don't think that's the worst thing to do when you're first teaching, because you do need time and you know, understanding to get to know all the levels. And certainly if you're just learning how to be a teacher in the first place, managing all the levels is quite difficult. So if that is what you've decided to do, that's okay. But I think if you feel like you are an advanced player and you understand advanced classical repertoire, then really the next step would be to do this with help. Find a mentor, get a lot of information, take more lessons yourself. And I do think it's partly imposter syndrome. It's so hard to say, because some teachers should have a reality check and think to themselves, I need some help in doing this, right? Especially the first few times we do it. But then you also want to make sure that it's not just a false imposter syndrome that's getting in the way of you walking into that level with your student. And certainly the first time you do anything, I mean, I'm sure we all look back at the first lessons or first year of lessons that we taught and we think, oh my goodness, what was I doing, right? And you want to refund all that money that they paid you. But we all have to start somewhere, right? And experience is the best teacher in teaching, for sure. And it's not to say that those lessons were worthless. We just get better over time as we learn more and we learn from our experience.
I would tend to agree. I think as you are just getting started, you really need to get the basics down before you start looking at the advanced levels. Even if you can perform at that level, teaching it is another whole ball game, I think. And it was interesting, last week Suzanne came on the show. She's a teacher in our membership who taught a diploma level student for the first time last year, and then the student did the assessment this year, and it was great. She said exactly the same thing. You need to do it. The main thing is mentorship and learning. You have to be open to learning, connect with as many people as you can, watch masterclasses, learn, try and go for some lessons if you can with another teacher. And I think if teachers are in that position where they are like, yeah, maybe I could do this, but they have that sense of imposter syndrome, that's what we're trying to help with the work that we're doing this month and your amazing course, which we'll talk more about later on. What are some of the things, though, that teachers have to gain by keeping their connection with those advancing students? So if they're in that situation where they think they could do it, rather than hand them over, I guess, what are they losing if they do hand them over, or what are they gaining by keeping those students?
Well, the obvious is just continued relationship with that student and that family and the income that comes along with that. And kind of alongside that is just the huge benefit that we have as music teachers of getting to walk alongside a student for many, many years, that hardly any other teachers have that wonderful blessing in their life. So there is something to be said for just continuing to be that positive adult influence on a student as their maybe middle teenage years, right? And they're entering these levels. So I love having students all the way through till they graduate high school, because it's just such a special relationship. I do make sure that I'm not missing things and that I'm not having major blind spots by making sure they're going to evaluative events and I'm keeping up my own professional development, just so I'm not, you know, kind of in my own tunnel without any feedback about their playing. And like you were saying, I have two of my own teachers, as well as my mom was she's a semi-retired piano teacher. And I will frequently email or text one of them and say, I'm feeling unsure about this piece, or do you have a repertoire suggestion for this student? And it's a great way to stay in touch with my teachers and make sure I'm staying on the right path.
I think it's really reassuring for other teachers to hear that someone like you, Jenna, would still go and ask your other mentors for help.
Absolutely. And I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky to have people like that in my life that I have stayed in contact with.
And I think just that continuity. I mean, you've spent or any of us who have got a student to the late intermediate level have spent at least 5 years, eight, maybe 10 years working with them, isn't it? Wouldn't it be great to be able to continue and enjoy the fruits of all that labor of all those years in order to keep working with them? I think that's really special. So what are some of the key skills that are required of piano students before they start meeting this early advanced repertoire?
Well, I actually made a list that's in the workbook of this course that we're talking about, and I categorized the list of difficulty areas in piano playing into four categories. So rhythm, pitch, technique, and then general, however you want to phrase this, expression or musicality or even stylistic concerns, I guess you could say. But within rhythm, you're thinking things about 30-second notes, polyrhythms, you know, not just
lots
two against three, but yeah, lots of polyrhythms, especially if you're talking about Debussy, like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and Chopin for that matter, fours and threes and threes and twos.
Absolutely, 100%. Mm. Yeah, syncopation and the ability to hold a steady tempo alongside also using rubato, right? So those would be the main things within rhythm. Within pitch, we're talking ability to play and read the entire range of the keyboard, of course, fluency with ledger lines and a lot of accidentals, particularly when you're talking about, you know, chromatic, romantic, or certainly 20th century repertoire. And of course, the ability to play in all of the major and minor keys. We tend not to play in all of them frequently, but you definitely need to have had experience with up to, say, five or six sharps or flats before you're entering that advanced level. And then I think technique is one of the biggest ones. So, you know, you have to be able to play all your major and minor scales fast. You have to know all of your major and minor augmented and diminished triads and their inversions, because those are all going to show up in the repertoire. Four note chords and their inversions, major and minor arpeggios, octaves, and we could be talking about broken or blocked octaves, as well as then other intervals like double thirds or double sixths, and then also just physical endurance for playing longer pieces. So you start to get this in the upper and intermediate level, you know, pieces that are maybe 5 pages long in a standard edition, where there really is just something to be said for being able to go from the start to the end in tempo, you know, kind of like running a marathon. You have to be able to keep your energy all the way to the end. So most of those things I just mentioned as far as technique, students are going to experience those towards late intermediate, and they can't be encountering octaves or four note chords for the first time in an advanced piece. They need to have, even if they're not amazing at them yet, and it's not, you know, completely fluid and intuitive, they need to have encountered them and had some ideas of how to do it. And then lastly, musicality, I would say ability to shape phrases with no coaching from a teacher, ability to voice individual notes in a chord, such as the top note in your right hand, mastery of a variety of articulations, including varied articulations between the two hands, skillful use of the damper pedal, understanding of basic ornamentation, ability to play two-part counterpoint, such as Bach inventions, and then a basic ability to display stylistic differences, so that a student at the late intermediate level leaving that should know, I'm not going to play Chopin the same way I'm going to play Bach. You know, even if they don't understand all the intricacies of performance practice, there's still going to be a basic understanding of how we would approach Baroque style versus Romantic style.
Mm. Suzanne, in last week's episode, mentioned that as well, that the understanding of the stylistic conventions of the three main periods is critical, really, for a teacher to be able to impart, and preferably to be able to demonstrate, so that rather talk it through that the student can understand it by watching and listening. Yeah, I think that's a really helpful list. And it made me think, Jana, do you have any repertoire pieces that you sort of require students to learn? It's like, you really need to do this before you do that one.
That's a great question. I don't do a lot of that because I like to vary it up. I get really bored if I'm teaching the same thing. I would never make it as a Suzuki teacher, for instance, because I like to use a lot of different repertoire. But there are a few non-negotiables. Mostly the Bach conventions would be the top of that list.
We're not talking the whole collection. We're just talking
not
about
the whole collection.
Would you do three part as well?
Yes, although I will say I should do more of those. That's something I was really just thinking the other day because I was wanting to assign one to one of my high school students. I want my students definitely playing like at least three of the two-part inventions before they're going on. I have heard of teachers who make their students learn all of them, and that would just take a lot of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly plenty of sonatinas in the intermediate level or the earliest sonatas like Beethoven Opus 49, number 2. I do have, as far as Beethoven goes, I would say that I haven't thought about this necessarily intentionally, but all of my students tend to play either Opus 49, number 1 or 2 or Opus 79. So one of those three, they're labeled light sonatas within the collection, that they should have played one of those. And then certainly, you know, the harder Clementi, the end of Opus 36, or the harder Kuhlau, they should have done at least a few of these things before we're going to embark upon, you know, what might be a quote unquote real sonata, not the light sonatas. So those would be examples of things. Students should definitely do some of the dance forms, like a waltz, an easier Chopin waltz, and some of those, and definitely various character pieces, both from the 19th and 20th century, so that they're ready for those bigger pieces or more technically demanding pieces, and they've got a sense of the style.
Mm. It definitely has made me think of some of the lead-up pieces that I like giving before students move on to other ones. And I can think of some of the Moskovsky studies and etudes are fantastic for leading up to some of the Chopin etudes. And I think there's some interesting pathways.
I need to do more of those. I was actually just thinking that, looking at a repertoire list of a competition, I thought, I need to do more Moskovsky for sure. So
I love Moskovsky. Some amazing, beautiful melodies and a really decent step up from Clementi, for example, but not quite as difficult as some of the other works we're talking about from Chopin. All right. So let's now talk. You've mentioned some of the things that students need to be ready for in regard to technique, and they need to know stylistic interpretation, etc. What about the teaching of these students? There's lots of components. Like teaching the repertoire, the notes, is only one part. It's actually probably a relatively small part because the student should be able to read the notes by now. So what are some of those other factors that we need to be conscious of as teachers?
Oh, man, that's a big question. I think, yes, obviously we are checkers of accuracy, and that is a small part of lessons. I would say, besides helping them learn the piece and take it in, the secondary concern is solving technical problems. And you can end up at this early advanced level starting, especially for students who are practicing a lot, starting to encounter injuries. So we want to prevent that by teaching good alignment and, you know, relaxation skills in the intermediate period. But then as they are taking on more, like a piece with several octaves or something like that, we're helping them make sure they're continuing to use good body aware technique. And then, this sounds so silly, but truthfully, making sure a student is very much paying attention to what is in the score. That is what classical musicians do. And whether or not you like that or not, but it is just true that we have to really pay attention to what is on the printed page. This is one of the reasons why choosing a good edition is so important. But just truly be observing dynamics, articulation markings, all of the other expression markings. And then you can, as much as you enjoy, you can break out into further performance practice discussions about and pondering, such as, why do you think Mozart wrote those dynamics in that way? But I will tell you a little story. I missed a masterclass that I wanted to go to with Jeremy Denk. So for those of your listeners who are familiar with Jeremy Denk, he came and did a masterclass locally around me, and I wanted to hear it, but I couldn't go. And I asked somebody who went afterwards, and I think it was all Mozart and Beethoven on the masterclass. I can't remember. And so I asked somebody afterwards, how was it? And he said, oh, it was great. He just reminded everybody that all you have to do is do what's exactly in the score.
Follow the score.
Of course, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but
really quite unhelpful.
It is a good reminder that there's no great mystery to what we do. You know, we follow what the composer has laid out. We listen with our ears, and we make sure we understand the basics of performance practice. And we listen to other great artists play and, you know, in some ways imitate what they've done and then forge our own interpretation as well. So,
and one of the big outcomes of being able to play advanced repertoire, generally speaking, is some sort of performance. So do you tend to spend much time on how to perform, how to prepare, how to prevent the nerves, how to bow, you know, all those things?
Yes, I do. And part of that is my own wiring. I love performing. I always have since I was younger. And I do think it's really important for teachers to understand and students to understand that performing is a very different skill than just playing in the comfort of your own home. And there is no shame in feeling the effects of whatever you want to call it, just nervousness or your body's stress response. Everyone feels something under pressure. It's just a question of where you are on the spectrum to light butterflies in your stomach, all the way to debilitating performance anxiety, right? Everyone falls somewhere on that spectrum. So I do talk about that, particularly with my teenagers, not so much with my little kids because they just don't need that, but we're talking about advanced students here. So yes, we talk about that a lot, just what the physical realities are of the hormones going through our bodies when we feel under pressure. And then we talk about how to practice. And one of the main things that I just try to go over with teenagers in particular is that practicing performing is different than just practicing. You have to set aside times where you say, okay, even though I'm in my own home, you know, practicing right now, this next time that I run through my sonata is a performance. And you either ask your mom to come listen, or you record yourself on your smartphone, or you even just say, I'm imagining I'm in the performance and I'm going to just do it that way. Because that does change our body and brain's response to what's happening in that moment. And you don't let yourself go back and fix mistakes or restart or any of those kinds of things. And I, even when I was doing my graduate degree, I feel like I saw other students who weren't doing that very well. You know, they spent a lot of time rehearsing and playing things over and over and over and over again, and not necessarily preparing themselves for the stage in a way that would have let them play at their peak.
Mm. And ideally, the more you actually do play in front of people, obviously, the better you get.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take a moment to let you know about an amazing community of music teachers ready to welcome you over at Top Music Pro. Top Music Pro is the global hub for music teachers looking to connect, learn, grow, and be challenged in both their teaching and studio businesses. Community members save time by accessing hundreds of step-by-step lesson plans, creative teaching frameworks, business guides, online courses, and workshops. We offer training in topics as diverse as music technique, lead sheets, website building, intermediate repertoire, group teaching, and special needs teaching. We also save you money through our extensive discounts, including those with Music Notes, Sheet Music Plus, Music Room, Office Depot, Tonebase, and many more. And if you like sheet music, all our members get a free book of studio-licensed, beautifully engraved sheet music each and every month. As a valued podcast listener, you can check out the Top Music Pro community free for 14 days by heading to topmusicpro.com, clicking Join Now on our studio tier, and using the special coupon code IMTPOD23. That's all one word. So that's IMTPOD23. We can't wait to welcome you inside. You mentioned additions before. I know it could be a big topic. Really simply, I love the Blue Henley additions. They're just my favorite by far. Are you on the same page?
Too.
Literally?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The whole stack, you can like barely see them in the video.
They're so
here.
Nice, aren't they? And they lie flat and they're not quite bright white. They're just beautiful.
Yes.
Is that your recommendation for teachers who are going down this path?
So Henley is an urtext. So your other main urtexts would be Baron-Reiter or Vienna urtext. Those are all. And then, of course, Chopin has the new Chopin edition. But urtext simply means supposedly unedited, with the exception of fingering. Now, that's kind of a hilarious word because an editor has to sit there and look at a manuscript and make decisions, and two editors of the same manuscript can make two different decisions. But anyway, urtext is one option, or you can use edited editions. And I frequently call those student editions. So an example of a good student edition would be the Alfred Masterworks. And of course, they have different editors throughout, but Maurice Henson and Willard Palmer are two of my favorite. And they've done a lot of the well, Willard Palmer has done most of the Bach for Alpha Masterworks. But all that to say, for teachers who don't feel 100% comfortable with performance practice themselves, particularly around Baroque, I would say start with a good student edition, Willard Palmer being the primary 100%. Example I would give you.
Yeah.
If you feel like you understand performance practice, or if you are doing a lot of self-study, then really nothing compares to having a good, very high quality Urtext in front of you. So because I feel very comfortable with, at this point, I didn't always, but at this point, with that kind of thing, I actually ask my students when they get to the Bach invention point to buy the Henley inventions. It's actually not that expensive, and it's just a really nice, that's usually my students' first Urtext that they get. And then once they're hitting Beethoven sonatas and Mozart sonatas, I am careful to help them choose one. But I'm not above using the Alfred Masterworks or something similar for those types of pieces.
Yeah, and I used to have students who will download a whole like La Campanella or something from IMSLP, and it'll be like the 1800s edition. And I was like, the first thing I'll say, by the way, I've never taught La Campanella, I can barely play it myself. The first thing I'll say is, all right, go and get, you just need to download, here's a Henley, this is how beautiful it is, go and buy one of these and then come back and we'll start using that. Because the other thing that those works give you is just a clear layout, just a full page. So many of the internet ones from IMSLP or other free sites are just cramped and so hard. And when you're getting thousands of notes, it's too hard.
Even some of the old Schirmer, which I do not recommend old yellow Schirmer for most things, or the old Dover, like Dover did all of the Debussy and Rachmaninoff preludes and things like that. And I was teaching an adult this week a Rachmaninoff prelude, and she was like, I can't even see the notes on the page, because it was we were looking at another edition in her lesson so that we could like confirm that she had, you know, and consulting fingering and all that. So it is definitely worth what you pay for it. And hopefully, if you have a student at the early advanced level, they love the piano, right? They're sticking with this. And even if they're, you know, 17 or 18 at this point, they're probably going to continue to play as an adult. So investing in a $30 book is not a problem for them, I don't think. I think it's well worth that. They'll keep it for years and years to come.
Yeah, but you wouldn't expect that of someone who's been learning for a year, for example, is what you're saying.
Right. And that's why I recommend all those intermediate collections that I've talked about in other places on Top Music, things like Masterwork Classics by Jane McGraw and similar books like that, which are still great editing.
All right. So we've talked about the course a couple of times that you've created for us inside Top Music Pro, and it's all about teaching early advanced students for teachers who might not have thought that they could do it before. And firstly, I've just got to say a huge thank you, Jenna. It's a brilliant course, and it's exactly what I would have loved to have had when I was in this position of taking on advanced students. And I felt like an imposter and I had no confidence, because truth be told, I went all in when I started teaching piano, and I wanted to be those people giving masterclasses on stage who could play, you know, the Boris Berman's or whatever. They would just sit down at the other piano next to the person, just play from memory perfectly these horrendously difficult ballades and stuff. And I thought, I want to be able to do that. Now, I've realized that I can't actually do that, because these people learnt all that repertoire before they were 15, probably. And so it's just in their bodies. They're never going to forget it. But what your course gave me, I think the thing that I took away most was, it was just so down to earth, and it just allowed me to relax and go, it's okay, I can do this. And I don't have to be that person I've seen on stage. And I don't have to be a performer, concert performer. There are other ways to look at it. So thank you. It is brilliant. So can you tell us about it? What questions are you trying to help teachers with? What questions are you trying to answer, and what does the course look like?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of introductory little items and closing items, but then the bulk of the course really is working through the four time periods and giving you an example of a piece that your student at that level might be working on, as well as some background and general stylistic concerns about that time period or that type of piece. So the Baroque module is a Bach prelude and fugue, a lot about general concerns on that you know, the Well-Tempered Clavier. And then I go in depth on the B flat from book one, which is my favorite first Bach prelude and fugue to teach to a student. And I have a student playing it right now. And then the classical model is all about early advanced sonatas. And I actually give three mini examples in that, one by Haydn, one by Mozart, and one by Beethoven. And it's not the Pathetique, just to throw that out there. But I talk about generally teaching sonatas as well. And then romantic, same thing, general concerns about the time period and the famous E flat major nocturne by Chopin. And then in the 20th century, instead of doing one piece, because there is such a variety of styles in the 20th century, I actually did several mini examples, and I did it according to idiom. What was kind of the main 20th century idiom found in that piece? So something such as jazz style or half steps or accents. And I kind of broke it up that way. Because I actually, when I was making the outline for the course, I sat here racking my brain on how I could find one piece that would encompass all those things. I couldn't come up with it. So I decided to go that way. It was actually my husband's idea. It was brilliant. So I was really happy with how that turned out. And I meant I got to look at a bunch of repertoire. In the introductory material, I talked about a lot of the things we've already talked about so far in this interview. As far as, you know, what should late intermediate students know how to do, and what is the responsibility of the teacher on self-study and your ability to do this. I also talk a little bit briefly about training students to practice at this level, because I've just had far too many adult musicians, teachers say things to me like, I didn't learn how to practice until I went to university. And so I would love to stop everyone from saying that. I would love for teachers to teach their students how to practice.
Right. Yeah. How not to start at the beginning, how to break things up, how to find the hard bits, what to do with the hard bits. That's what we're talking about.
Right. So this is not a course about practicing, but I do have, I think it was my top five or six, top six general practice techniques, one of which is, you know, don't start at the beginning. And then at the end of the course, the kind of final thoughts, I talk briefly about memorization as well as performance anxiety, kind of some things we already touched on. And then just a little bit about auditions, because many of these students who are studying this level of repertoire, who are coming to you saying, I want to play this kind of repertoire, might be looking at doing competitions or an audition for a conservatory or a university. And I think that's probably one of the big questions. If a student comes to you and says, I want to be a music major, I want to be prepared for this audition, or especially in more an Australian context, I want to do this very high level exam. You know, I'm trying to help teachers navigate that first time through that process. And again, your first or second time through, you should be asking for help along the way. But this course is intended to be that kind of foundational, you know, pedagogy course specific to this topic to get you started on that process.
Mm. It truly is like a masterclass in piano teaching in general. And I actually think teachers of any level student, right down to beginner, the knowledge they will gain from your explanations of what these composers are doing, the time periods, will enhance their teaching of any student at any level. It was that, like, just that good. I was just, you've done an incredible job putting it together. So I really encourage teachers, even if you're not really thinking about teaching advanced students, you're going to pick up lots and lots for this that you can apply to things at a lower level.
Can I just add one thing there that when I think about what makes a good intermediate teacher, I think about someone who understands all these advanced concepts and is able to teach them at the intermediate level. And I think many very, very fine pianists are, you know, just because you're an amazing concert pianist does not mean you're an amazing teacher, right? We know that. And there's teachers who understand advanced stuff, but don't know how to distill it, right? For younger students or less experienced students. And so part of my hope in this and also my piece by piece series within the membership is to help teachers do just that, to distill those concepts that are a little bit more, you know, old fashioned or performance practice oriented, and yet make them practical and help your students play in a way that makes the music come alive and makes it become much more expressive.
Now, I've got a couple of statements that I wonder if you could tell us whether you believe it's a myth or it's true. Firstly, I need to be able to play all the repertoire perfectly from memory as a performance before I'm ready to teach my students these pieces.
Well, if that were the case, I would be out of a lot of my job.
Phew, so, I'm glad that, that was the answer.
No, I mean, so I would say that upper intermediate and advanced is probably about, at this very, very moment, it's probably about 30% of my studio. And I can't sit down from memory and play all of those students' repertoire right now for you. But I've played a lot of their repertoire in the past, or I've played very, very similar pieces to those that have informed my understanding of those pieces in the past. And I do have the technical ability to sit down and demonstrate something short for them. And if I want to take some time to practice one section of their piece or the whole piece, I can take that time and then be ready to demonstrate. Certainly, if it's something new that I'm really unfamiliar with, I'm much more likely to do more of that study than if it's something I've taught or played before. But no, please don't ask me at the drop of the hat to play all of my advanced students' repertoire from memory.
And I think that said, and I would agree, if you are teaching a Beethoven sonata for the first time and you've never played it yourself, one of the best things you can do is go and learn that piece and have lessons on it with another teacher. Because you'll find the technical, you'll find the challenges, you'll find the hot spots, and then you'll be taught by the other teacher how to get through some of those spots. So I think that's, and it just comes back again to that mentoring, that not trying to do this on your own the first time. Another statement, I need to know all the advanced repertoire, not to play it, but to know the names of it. Like I need to be able to, like we've been talking about a ballad here or there and a Moskowski and stuff. If I'm not talking like that, am I able to teach this level?
Well, I think that one's a little bit harder to answer exactly. No, you certainly don't need to be able to talk about all of it. Now, that said, everything kind of falls into little categories. It's the same thing. Like if I've played 5 Beethoven sonatas, that's going to inform my understanding of any other Beethoven sonata. So I do think you need to be broadly informed in general and be able to place things in categories. But do you need to have every K number on every Mozart sonata memorized and certain and all 550 Scarlatti sonatas categorized in your brain? No way. You know, that's just too much information for us to hold. It's much more important to be a generalist and then to study, be ahead of your student in what they are doing, the specific student at hand. And you can always do more listening. I mean, right? We have so much access to recordings. So you can certainly just start your own listening project. I want to listen to all the Beethoven sonatas this week. You know, that's totally doable. And you can do that while you're doing your dishes.
Yeah, even put it on while you're doing something else. That's right.
Exactly.
And last one, what's your thoughts on sitting the exam or going for the audition? Or if you're sending someone for a competition, should you have tried to have been in a competition yourself in order to teach them and know what to expect kind of thing? Does that make sense?
I would say generally, yes. However, I think there is a possibility of you continuing to be a student's main teacher and then bringing in some support. So you could send your student for a lesson or masterclass or 2 lessons with your master teacher, you know, to just keep your blinders from ignoring things, you know, to make sure you're on the right track. And I've even done this with my own kids because I've taught my own children, but in order to not have it just be me and my son, I send my now 17-year-old to a colleague about a few times per year, you know, just for him to help him. And it's not just mom talking to him the whole time, but I like still being part of my kids' music education. I know that's slightly tangential, but it would be the same thing if you're doing this for the first time. Certainly, you know, go to your own master teacher or contact an excellent teacher in your area and say, could so-and-so come just have one-hour lesson with you to kind of prepare for this big thing that they've never done before? There's no shame in asking for that help.
No, absolutely. And even asking if you could sit in on that lesson, and you can learn heaps from that too. I think one of the other things that became really clear to me as I started playing more advanced music and learning it and having my own lessons and doing that, going and playing for various teachers, is you're going to get a whole different interpretative suggestions. Some people are going to hate something that you do. Others are going to love it. And I think this is one of the other big differences between the intermediate and advanced levels, is eventually you're going to have to make the decisions about how you're going to interpret this piece. And it may even be that if I was having lessons with you, Jenna, and you did something I didn't feel it was right, I, as the advanced performer, should be able to put that forward to you and play it differently. Would you agree with that as well?
I would. Not all teachers would probably agree with you. But I will frequently, particularly with things that are very nuanced and subtle, such as pedaling or use of the una corda pedal or, you know, other nuanced things, I will frequently say to my advanced students, you know, let's try this. Let's try that. Okay, what do you like the sound of better? Go home and listen to 3 recordings. See if you can figure out, does Ashkenazi pedal straight through that long scale, you know, or does he clear it in the middle? And then make an informed decision. And I have also, particularly with very opinionated students, I have in the past said, I think if I were playing it, I would do that a little differently. And you just need to be prepared that if you go play this an exam, the judge might tell you they don't like how you're doing that. But if you were really committed to that, then by all means, go for it. I think there's been a few things I've said, no, you can't go out of my studio and do that. But we're right. That would be really, really basics, you know? And then if it's something more nuanced, I will frequently say something along the lines of, just know your judge might comment on this because they may not think agree. That articulate, yeah, it may not agree.
Yeah. And I'm thinking particularly in Baroque music, detachment of left-hand patterns and things.
That's exactly
like that.
What I was thinking about was Baroque articulation. I like to help my students decide expressive articulation. And I have, that is one of the things I have said, just know that the judge may not like your articulation right here.
Wow. All right. I think we've covered most of the bases. Is there anything we've forgotten that you can think of that you wanted to discuss before we wrap things up?
No, I was really privileged to make this, Tim, and I really like your questions about how teachers should be thinking about this. And one of the reasons that Top Music Pro is so great is that it is a community where people can find people who know more about something else. And so we should always be on the continual quest to learn more, try new things, even if it feels uncomfortable. And if you never try the, you know, early advanced repertoire with your students, then you'll never get a chance to do it. But if you do it a few times, it starts to get easier and easier as you go.
I love that. And I know how passionate you are about and continued learning for teachers. And I think that's one great advantage of trying this. Even if you don't end up teaching an advanced student, try to challenge yourself to play some of this repertoire that you love, probably set aside the practice time, remind yourself of what it's all like, and give yourself that confidence that you can not only play it, but maybe you can teach it. So look, thank you so much, Jenna, for coming on the show today. And we are so excited to be sharing your course with all our Top Music Pro members. More details to come.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, I do hope that episode has got you excited and inspired, both about teaching early advanced students yourself, but also about our amazing Advancing Pianists course, which will be released in time for Thanksgiving in just 2 weeks. I'm very excited. The course is actually more than just about advanced teaching. It really is a masterclass in piano teaching more generally. And if you're a Top Music Pro member or you've seen any of our releases of our Piece by Piece series, these are the videos Jenna records for us every couple of weeks here inside our Top Music Pro Academy, where she goes into detail about teaching some of the most famous pieces of intermediate repertoire. It comes with the background of the piece, about the composer, how to tackle some of the technical challenges, how to encourage students to practice it and what they should practice and how they should go about doing that, and also comes with a one-page download of teaching tips that you can keep for reference. So if you've ever seen any of those videos, and they are amazing, high quality with overhead piano views and all that kind of stuff, you're going to be blown away with Jenna's course, the Advancing Pianist course, which Jenna has recorded for us in her beautiful studio. This course gives you the top-down, big-picture view of teaching at the advanced level, But what that means is that all the skills that you learn there are applicable to students playing intermediate repertoire as well. This is the great thing. By engaging in this course, even if you don't teach advanced students, you will become a better teacher of your intermediate and beginner students. I can't believe how much my own teaching of all students improved as I was having lessons with a master teacher and preparing for my own advanced diploma exam. This is a similar experience that you will get from this course. So I have to say, you have to get this course. We'll give you an overview of all the main eras, the preludes and fugues, what they are, how they work. There's demonstrations of pieces. There's a couple of bonuses there about octaves and fast passage work, how to do it. In fact, let's check out just a couple of the sections of the course. We're going to go into much more detail of it and show you some excerpts in a couple of weeks' time. But until then, for your sort of overview, we've got our first module has information about practice and early advanced technique, the importance of teacher study and those sorts of things. And then we get into module two, which is all about the Baroque period, preludes and fugues, and particular look at some of the well-tempered clavier. Then into sonatas, Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven in particular, sonata form and everything you need to know about styling and articulation in both those two eras. Then in module four, we look at romantic repertoire, particularly with expression and Chopin. And then module five unpacks in multiple videos 20th century music, examples of idioms, and then we look at memorization, performance anxiety, and even college auditions and competitions. This is so epic and so completely encompassing. I can't begin to tell you how useful this has even been for my own teaching, because I do teach a few advanced students and I'm learning stuff from Jenna all the time as I go through this course. So we've got all the details coming in 2 weeks' time, including a big discount on our membership, which we haven't offered in a couple of years, and also throwing in some bonuses for those of you who want to join us to take advantage of this course, and then everything else in our academy as well, which, of course, you get when you join the Top Music Pro. All right, that's it for the show this week. Next week on the podcast, we are taking a little interlude from the advanced teaching, and we're talking with our great friend Mike Grande on why coaching isn't just for athletes. We're going to pick up some stories of Mike's work teaching music to children and teachers in Rwanda. You'll be moved. You'll have laughs. I guarantee you'll enjoy this episode. It's coming up next week. Until then, I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll speak to you next week. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.